Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Well, it's time to talk about a taboo subject that needs to be discussed. The truly awful clients copywriters inevitably get, and how to set things right with them, or make a quick draw McGraw exit. We've all had them. They can't be changed or avoided, but what to do about them? This can be learned from an expert who's been there, done that, and figured it out. Our special guest today is A-list copywriter Kim Krause-Schwamm, author of the great new book, Clients' Badassery Secrets, How Copywriters Can Earn More, Run a Thriving Freelance Business, and Cut Out the Client Bullshit. I've read it, and it's really good. And Kim's just the right person to write this book, too. She's worked with big direct response publishers as someone who hires copywriters, and she's also someone who's written copy for some of the best-known publishers and supplement companies in the world, and plenty of other clients, too, along the way. Today, she's going to tell us about the seven kinds of clients you meet on the way to copywriting hell, and how to avoid their tricks and traps and come out ahead. So, just as I know, you'll come out ahead if you remember that copy is powerful, and you're responsible for what you use with what you hear on this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in a highly regulated industry like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. I just suggested that to one of my clients this week, and our larger clients typically do this all the time. So, Kim, welcome, and thanks for being here. And, you know, before we get into these seven types of problem clients, you work with a lot of copywriters, you mentor them, you have classes, you speak a lot. So something must have inspired you to write this book. And I know we're going to talk about the book a lot more at the end of the show, but if you could just briefly tell us, why did you write the book?
There's so many people that I've either just met at conferences, had conversations with. There's people that I've mentored and coached. And I kept seeing a lot of the same issues again and again. And even more experienced copywriters, like it would just floor me that they'd get into certain situations, or they were undercharging, or they weren't using a contract, or they were, you know, ruining the day they ever met a particular client that was making their lives miserable. Right. I mean, I'm even talking some really top level people that you would think would maybe know better. But then there's, of course, the legions of people just breaking in who didn't have anybody to kind of show them the ropes or here's the path. Right. So, yeah. And to be honest, the book came about through a number of different emails and copy insiders issues that I had sent to my email list. And I basically pulled everything together and, you know, added new stuff and made it into a book. So that's kind of how it came together. You know, it was almost like, that's why I did the book.
Sort of organically, just out of things. I think that's the best way to do a book. I remember best-selling author J. Conrad Levinson told me you start out with somebody's problem and then you come up with solutions. And this book is certainly like that. So let's talk about the clients you meet on the road to copywriting, quote unquote, hell. What's the first one?
Well, the first one is one who's never worked with a copywriter before, you know, and again, that could be a great client or it could be a miserable client, right? So this is part of what you have to flesh out when you're deciding if you're going to take them on or not. Or if you do take them on, you know, things you have to look out for. If you're working with a client like that, expect to do a lot of extra hand-holding along the way. You're probably going to be providing more strategy along with copy. So you probably should charge more than, let's say, you're working with somebody who's like, boom, boom, straightforward project, let's go, right? They also may be very nervous about, is this going to work? And maybe for them, it's a big investment. So they're going to maybe be very nitpicky back and forth oh, you know, second guessing everything you're doing, right? I mean, I've had a couple clients, honestly, that were like this. One, I started to get the vibes very soon after accepting, you know, deciding to work with him and getting my 50% advance, you know, several months in advance. And then just with the different behavior, I kind of just decided, you know what, I'm going to see if he just wants to cancel the project before it begins, even though I normally wouldn't do that, because I was just getting those kind of vibes that he was going to be a difficult client. And sure enough, he was like, yeah, and I gave him his money back. I had another client where it was too late to do that. And it was just a process that took a lot more time. So that's why I came up with that type of client. They're not necessarily in any kind of order, you know, worse, you know, on. But yeah, that is definitely a type of client to be aware of.
And so giving them their money back is one solution. What's the other solution? Is hand-holding, over-explaining?
Right. So make sure you're charging enough. Make sure that you are, and I talk about some of these other tactics later. So, you know, take the lead. Don't be afraid to step up and kind of be in the driver's seat more. You know, don't just be an order taker. You know, help ensure the success of the project. I mean, you know, you may or may not have an arrangement where you're actually going to get some kind of incentive or royalty. Obviously, if you are, you're more incentivized to make sure that it is going to be successful. But honestly, you should approach every client with that attitude anyway, that you want it to be as successful as possible. This is how you get repeat business. This is how you get referrals. This is how you start to get a reputation for delivering excellent work that produces results. So, you know, you're going to want to get a little more in the driver's seat to ensure that this is going to be successful. And, you know, you may want to try to get more money so that you can spend that kind of extra time on this project that it's going to require.
Okay, that's really good advice. I hope everyone is taking notes, because this is awesome stuff. Number two, they think they're a good copywriter. They think they're a good copywriter.
Okay, yeah, this one's challenging, and you don't always know it. You know, it's a hard one to screen for, although they will drop little hints like, you know, or maybe it's an obvious hint, you know, oh, I wrote the original control, you know, I want to see if you can beat it or something like that, right? So you already kind of get a hint. I actually have one client that I worked with who was one of the top well-known copywriters before he started his publishing and supplement business. And so he's an exception to the rule, because even though he's a great copywriter, he respects what copywriters do. And we always worked in a very collaborative way and got some big winners. But unfortunately, I've worked with other copywriters or business owners who think they are good copywriters, and it's like a butting of the heads, right? Or they're never going to like what you produce, no matter how good it is, because it's not necessarily the way they would write it. So that can be a challenge. So you have to kind of look at that person, you know, on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, sometimes you just have to push back. It's like, look, you hired me because you wanted to take a fresh approach. This is the approach that I'm taking. And then, you know, if you have to resell yourself, say, look, this is what it's worked for other clients. You know, let's learn something here. Let's go ahead and let me do it this way. You know, so you got to be confident enough to be able to push back. At the same time, you have an advantage if they've got some really good ideas and feedback that's going to make your copy stronger. So do take advantage of that. Don't be, you know, so bullheaded about your own approach that you're not open to learning and getting that feedback, because it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, so it's kind of a combination between confrontation and collaboration, and you got to be really careful which one you use and how, right?
Exactly.
Okay, let's go to the third one, the bootstrapping client. Oh boy, I've been there. I'll let you tell the story, but I'm just groaning inside as I even read those words.
Oh yeah, there's so many different variations of this one. A lot of times too, I've seen them combined with number one and number two, you know, which makes them even worse, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just don't really have the money to afford you up front. So they're gonna try all these different ways to tantalize you. It's like equity deals or, you know, other types of, you know, incentives that basically want you to kind of basically work for free or accept a much lower rate, you know, for something that's not even proven, right? You don't know if their business is going to work or if the new product launch is going to work or whatever it is that they're bootstrapping. So you're taking an inordinate amount of risk with your time. So this is why this particular client is challenging. Now, if it's a known person who's launched other businesses successfully, you really think it's, you know, you believe in the concept, you have some, you know, feelings that it could be successful, maybe it's worth the risk. But I would just, you know, tread carefully, make sure they've got skin in the game. I talk about this later in the book, but when you work for free, plus some kind of incentive that may or may not ever arrive, you know, the client has no incentive to actually use your copy that you just labored over for weeks or months. So they've got to have some skin in the game. So that's one of the main reasons I always get money.
I think the shorthand is Danger Will Robinson, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, good. So number four, this one also makes me groan, the flip-flopping client.
Yeah, this can be challenging. It could be a solopreneur, entrepreneur type. It could be you're dealing with one of the lower level marketers in a big company. I mean, there's a lot of different people that could end up being the flip-flopping client. They're the ones that have you go off in one direction and they're loving it, but then next minute they're like, no, actually we think something else is going to work better. And it could be that they're either insecure and indecisive, or they got feedback from a manager that said, no, that's not what we want to do. And you're just getting jerked back and forth and back and forth. Or they're like, no, we want to actually do this offer instead, or we want to do this. So, you know, you really have to build into your contracts and agreements, especially if you're doing something on a flat fee basis, which again, most projects are flat fee. You get three rounds of revisions, for example. Anything beyond that is going to be charged at X amount of rate. It could be based on an hourly rate, or it could be for each additional email change or whatever it is, right? But you've got to build those parameters into your arrangement up front. And that's how you contain the flip-flopper from making you make endless revisions. It gets a little trickier if you're doing, like, let's say a long form promo where, you know, I usually include all changes until the client is satisfied, because again, I'm looking to say, we just want to get a winner here. I'm not working for the fee. You know, I'm working for the potential royalties. And so I'm fine with doing multiple revisions. However, that can get a little crazy too. So, but I generally don't put any kind of limit on that type of arrangement, but I would recommend it, especially for like flat fee copy.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I'm getting, which I do better sometimes than others, I guess that's true for all of us, is you need, as a copywriter, you need to do some hard thinking up front, some worst case scenarios, you need to ask yourself and your client some questions before you say yes. You need to strategize how it's going to go and how you're going to deal with it. I mean, you haven't said that explicitly, but I'm getting that implicitly from what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, that's how lawyers think. I mean, not that we need to become lawyers, God forbid, right? Lawyers are always worst case scenario. Let's protect against that, right? I mean, that's what you want in a lawyer. So you want to kind of think about it. And sometimes I will admit, I didn't have a contract for like the first 12 years, at least, that I was a freelancer, which is kind of insane. I mean, for, you know, promos where I had like a royalty deal, I would have them sign a little thing that said, here's what the royalty arrangement is. But I did not have a full-fledged contract. And eventually I just got to the point where I did have a few problems here and there. I was like, you know, this is crazy. I need to have a contract. But I learned a lot of these lessons from the school of hard knocks, like many of us. So, you know, and again, that's yet another reason for this book and for sharing this information, you know, on this podcast is, you know, let me help you, you know, not make the same mistakes I made. I'm not here to shame anybody. I'm not here to, you know, oh, I've always done it perfectly. No, I've made all these mistakes. That's why they're in here as types of clients from hell.
Yeah. And, you know, this is very valuable information, and some things someone can listen and nod and get it intellectually, but till it actually happens to them, but at least they'll have your book to go back to know what to do about it. All right, let's go to number five, which is the creepy crawly scope creep client. And I can think of a year of my life that I'm never going to get back because of one of those, but please go ahead and talk about them.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, so it happens.
They're a close relative of the flippy flopper. But yeah, they're almost immediately, as soon as you think you've negotiated the deal, let's say, you know, you've got the, and you've said yes, and you're kind of excited. And next thing you know, oh, wait, do you mind if we could just put like two more emails in there, you know? And a lot of times you're just like, you just want to, look, let's just get that, you know, advance check over here. You know, you're just relieved that you've got something that you're filling some slot in your schedule, let's say, and you don't want to lose it, right? So you're kind of vulnerable. And some people will just say, sure, it's just one email, right? But then next thing you know, the project's going and it's like, actually, we're going to add another downsell to the funnel, or we're going to add this or whatever, right? And next thing you know, it's like, you know, and I mean, again, having everything outlined as closely as you can. And I know it's tough because like if you're building out funnels or doing a launch, a lot of times all that stuff is not defined up front, but you need at least base your pricing on something, come up with the price, maybe build in a little bit for the inevitable add-ons that will come up. But then you do have to firmly push back depending on what it is and just say, you know, that's outside the scope of our agreement. I'm going to need to charge you XX more for that. And I am happy to work that in, you know, I know I didn't budget my time for it, but I'll work that in, but it'll be this much. And I can include that in the final bill. And you just practice saying that enough times. I'm just confident pushing back.
I know.
That's outside the scope of our agreement.
Yeah. Yeah,
here's the thing.
These are hard things to do, but they're necessary, right? So someone else doesn't take over your life.
It's like anything, and I do get into mindset stuff too in the book, right? But it's just like with any relationship, if people are pushing boundaries and you let them, the boundary pushers are going to push more and they're going to think that they can do it again and again. And sadly, especially in like the client copywriter relationship, they're not going to respect you as much. I mean, all of these things that I'm telling you to do, as scary as they might sound, are actually going to make the client respect you more. And it's going to make the way for a smoother working relationship overall. It even translates into how they view your copy, you know, because if they're not respecting you and they're like, oh, this person is desperate and they always say yes to me and I can walk all over them. And then you turn your copy in, they're not going to think this is good. Honestly, I mean, it's just kind of a strange thing. But they'll respect you more and they'll probably like your copy more and think it's better when you act like a professional who can't be pushed around. And you don't have to be an A-list copywriter to do this. You know, anybody can do this.
I agree. A lot of it's where you're starting from and you have to set your boundaries. Okay, so speaking of boundaries, number six, the horn dog client who makes sexual advances or remarks. I won't say anything about that in my own experience. Just go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it can happen to men, absolutely. Unfortunately, it is definitely a thing with women. And I'm sure it, you know, happens even in this, you know, a day and age of much greater, you know, awareness. But yeah, I talk about a few instances that are just, you know, kind of mind-boggling, really. And the thing with this horn dog client is they can just kind of bust out of nowhere, right? It could be somebody you've been working with and you think they're fine, right? And then all of a sudden something just happens that so throws you off guard. And this can happen in the workplace. It can happen as a freelancer. And a lot of women or people who are, you know, have been harassed, like I said, it could be men, you know, might let it slide one or two times, or, you know, maybe there's the uncomfortable, you know, pat on the back or something worse, right? And then they think they can't say anything. Like, and then it escalates, it gets worse, right? So these are all reasons why, if you can, the first time something happens, you've got to shut it down. You just got to shut that bad behavior down. Now, even if you have let it happen 3 or 5 or 10 times, it's not too late to shut it down. And I want to just let people know that. And so what had happened was a few years before I went freelance, and it's been now 26 years this month, David, can you believe that I've been in the freelance copywriting trenches, right? But I worked for a big publisher beforehand, as you mentioned, and I, you know, used to work and hire copywriters. In fact, worked with people like David Deutsch and Paris Rompopoulos as with me as the client, which was kind of fun to think about. But when I was at Phillips Publishing, it was around that time that a lot of sexual harassment became, you know, awareness happened with the whole Anita Hill thing and all that kind of stuff. So one day they brought in some attorneys and they just spoke to the company as a whole. And it's like, here's what sexual harassment is and here's how you handle it and blah, blah, blah. And there was this one thing that I talk about in this book called putting them on notice, right? And maybe from a legal standpoint, it's a requirement. But what I remembered was a two-sentence phrase, which is in the book, but I will share here. When you say things like that, it makes me uncomfortable. I want you to stop. Or it could be when you do things like that, it makes me uncomfortable. I want you to stop. And so when one of these things happened to me, the first time it was on a phone call with a client, second time it was actually when I was in a car with a client, I was so taken aback and shocked. That two-sentence phrase just popped in my head and I said it. And it's a non-blaming, you know, it's kind of like one of those I statements, like when you do this, blah, 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 right? It's not like you freaking asshole, right? It's literally a non-threatening I statement, but it's super clear that you don't want it to happen. And I've used it in other circumstances, you know, ever since. I mean, it's a really powerful two-word phrase. And I just, if you walk away with anything, I hope that that's something that just sticks in your brain. And I went on to work with both of these clients for many years and never had an issue. And they respected me more. And, you know, you could just say, you know, if that happens, obviously it's your right to say, I never even want to talk to that person again. But, you know, it was very respectful and never, it stopped. As soon as I just called it out in that non-threatening way, it stopped.
That's a really useful phrase and piece of advice. All right. Let's go to number seven. Oh, this is probably not the worst, but I think it's the worst anyway.
It's terrible.
The deadbeat client who pays late or not at all.
It is the worst. And in fact, I mean, the norm in general, right? If you're working with the client is get a 50% advance and then you get your remaining 50% when the project is finished. And I think for most cases, especially if you're within the same country, like in the US, that's a great arrangement. But you still could end up you got paid the first half, but now they're never paying the second half, right? This is where you want to have, it's worth following up with potentially a lawyer. And I have kind of a funny story in there, but I had done this one project and I think it was like a flat fee project. So it wasn't one of these things where I was also worried about ongoing royalties and everything went swimmingly, you know, submitted the invoice for the balance and then never heard from this person. And, you know, I would send emails and it was like crickets, right? And to the point that I was worried about this person, like, did something happen to them? You know, I was checking obituaries and news stories in their area. Like, were they in a car accident? Like, I mean, because it made no sense, right? I mean, it's not like I've never been stiffed before, because I have, but it was like, this was, everything went fine, right?
Ghosted,
so it wasn't until... I just had my attorney, who charged me a very minimal amount, to just basically write a one-page demand letter, and I had him FedEx it, so I knew the person would get it. Bingo, I got paid like that week. I never got an explanation, I never got an email, but I got my money. And so if it's enough, again, whatever enough is in your book, in this case, it wasn't a huge amount of money, but it was like $5,000, but it's still $5,000 is $5,000, and it's sort of the principle
it's
of the thing.
A lot of money, yeah.
You know, you're not going to get away with that. So I would just say, if you're working with somebody that you think it would be hard to get the money from later, get 100% up front. I mean, I know many copywriters, that is their standard arrangement. 100%
up front. I've done that. Depends on the client. But yeah, I've done that. And I know a lot of people who do that. Yeah.
I mean, I do it now for anybody outside the US, even if they're seem like great people come, you know, because I once got screwed over by somebody outside the US, right? And I couldn't, it was, you know, that was just too much to try to go collect, right? Too much trouble. Yeah. But, you know, or if it's a smaller project, like let's say it's $1,000 or $2,000, and it's kind of like, you know, why hassle with two payments, right? Just pay me $1,000 or $2,000 up front. Like if you were doing something like that, I think it's reasonable.
Right.
This is another reason too. It's funny, I don't necessarily talk about this, but, you know, there are things around like Upwork for copywriters that are just kind of starting out that weren't around for me, you know, 26 years ago. And it's actually a fairly safe place to at least, you know, get some of your early clients, right? And get some experience working with clients.
Yeah, the money is effectively in escrow there. It's not, I mean.
Exactly. So that is a worry that you don't have to really worry about. But it is, I've just seen so much pain over that type of client, you know, that they've caused, where people are like, and then one of the biggest mistakes, people start writing for a client before they've even gotten the advance. Don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No money. I don't touch your project. So I got the money. Right. I don't care if it's one of these rush jobs, which maybe you should charge more for, yeah, and maybe get 100%. But yeah, you gotta have money in hand.
Rush job, rush me the money. Job. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathan. Yeah. Show me the money.
I'm going to jump in and say a lot of the stuff that you talked about today, sometimes as a copywriter, you just have to make those stumbles. You have to hit the brick wall and realize, oh, okay, from now on, if this comes up, this is a deal breaker. I'm not going to work with this. And you don't know all of this stuff when you first start. I mean, a resource like your book is great, but sometimes it just takes the school of hard knocks. And then going forward, you say, oh, man, I see this red flag. I'm going to have to put it into this right now. And then the other thing that I was going to say is setting those boundaries up front, setting the expectations. Hey, this is how it's going to work. This is how I get paid. Mm-hmm. This is how you get your deliverables. This is the ways, the things that I will work with, the things that I won't work with. And again, mm-hmm, you might not know them when you're first starting out, but as you go forward, you kind of collect a bunch of scenarios, and then going forward, you set those expectations up front. And if you set those expectations up front, and then
yes, they it's do very the thing like
the
that.
Mission creep, or they do the, they stepped over this boundary, it's real easy. Hey, remember when we started out, I said this, and you right. mentioned respect and relationships, setting those healthy boundaries in any relationship, but especially a client
exactly.
relationship. Yeah. So it's a bunch of great takeaways so far.
Yeah, well, good. I'm so glad you're getting those, Nathan. And I, you know, I like your point about people might read this book and maybe they'll read it 10 times, like Ben Settle likes to recommend, right? But they still might go off and make some of these mistakes. Sometimes you have to sometimes make the mistakes. And my goal is to prevent you from doing that, you know, as much as possible. I mean, you're going to think that one of these people does not fall into the 7 nightmare clients category. But then you're going to get into a situation, right? And then hopefully some of these tips are going to help you minimize the damage and frustration. But sometimes it's just going to suck.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to go through the cycle a few times even to know what to look out for, what kind of boundaries to set, what the process is. But, you know, everything you can do to improve each time is good. Kim, there's so much in this book. It's such a great book. Tell us about it overall. We know it's for copywriters. It's really, I think you've said at least subtly that it's really for copywriters at all level, because even when Absolutely. You're an A-list copywriter, you know, current company accepted, of course, you may not have it all figured out. So there are things in here.
Even a section in there about when you're the hot girl or guy at the bar. Right. So what do you do when you do start getting really in demand? Right. There's new challenges, new problems. And so, I have a whole chapter on that. I have a whole lot of information about working in a house. Right. So this can work, you know, whether you're freelance. I mean, it's generally mainly for freelance copywriters, but whether you're in house, whether you're A-list, whether you're just starting out. And honestly, I think it's an instructive book for people who hire copywriters. You don't want to be one of these 7 clients from hell. And also just to understand, like, how do you work best with copywriters? I mean, it's a big investment for many businesses. And so if you can really leverage and make the most of that relationship, so it's a positive, you know, thriving relationship, you're going to get such better results from that copywriter and a much greater ROI. So I would recommend that even clients, people who hire copywriters, read it. They may find themselves in it.
They probably will. One of the things I like about the book that I don't see too often is you have some really solid business stuff, which we've talked about, but there's also some really good mindset stuff for the copywriter, for, you know, figuring out your own path, you know, dealing with fear of failure, dealing with imposter syndrome, and, you know, every one of us has to deal with that at some point. Could you talk a little bit about how you decided to mix those two kinds of things in there?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I feel gave me an advantage in many ways was having worked at Phillips Publishing, which at the time was a major, major direct response publisher. It was probably like five times bigger than Agora Publishing at the time. And so while working there as a marketer who also wrote copy, I saw, you know, from that standpoint, like the company would work with some of the best known copywriters in the business, like the Clayton Make pieces and Jim Rutz and Gary Bensavangas. And what I saw is no one expected every package to be a winner, right? It was okay to fail. Like even the big giants would fail, you know, sometimes spectacularly. And the client knew that because they were, you know, they're smart business people, right? They knew it's like, we're going to hire this, the big guns, the best in the business. But we also know that this is not an exact science. So otherwise, literally AI, and can't even do it now, would just be cranking out, right? You know, winning packages. Well, guess what? That's not happening. And it certainly wasn't happening 26 or 30 years ago. So it was okay to fail. And honestly, the business environment at the time there at the company was permission to fail, right? That's how we learn. That's how we go on and get big winners. So I think that mentality helped me because I bombed spectacularly, you know, on at least a few occasions starting out, and still have. I mean, over the years, everybody has ones that don't work.
Well, it hurts when it happens.
It hurts, but I'll tell you what, and I think I've talked about this in other platforms, but or maybe not so much in the book, but some of my biggest failures initially, I went back a second time with the client, tested something new, and it became one of my biggest winners or successes, right? That's how I got, became the first female copywriter to get a boardroom control. It was on my second try that I beat a promo written by Paris Rompopoulos. On my second try, I beat a financial promo with another company, you know, written by Jim Rutz. You know, I had some other things like that where second try, I wrote a 10-year control that paid me hundreds of thousands in royalties. So, you know, that's part of why, yeah, you have to get comfortable with failure. So one of the things too, I think I talk a little bit about improv. You know, I started dabbling with improv just for fun 4 or 5 years ago. And what I loved about it, outside of just feeling like I was a kid that got to go outside and play with my friends, you know, it felt like that, was it's all about, like, nothing's meant to be perfect or exact. Like, you take risks constantly. You just, and you're in a supportive environment, but it's all about just failing. And sometimes it's funnier, right? But just get comfortable with that idea that you may fail. And hopefully you're working with clients who are smart enough to say, you know what? We know this isn't an exact science. We actually liked a lot of what you did. Or you come back and say, you know what? I think I've got another idea. Or let's go back to this third original test angle that I wanted to try. Let's try that instead. Big winner. I mean, those are all things that I've tried to take a failure and turn it into a big success.
Kim, I meant to bring my iPad. I figured out on my iPad I can show the cover of a book with on a Kindle, but I forgot to do that. Could you show your book cover so we can see it?
Here it is.
Client Badassery Secrets. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Thank you. Here's the back too.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> That's kind of hard to read on YouTube.
Red jacket and boots on.
Oh, yeah.
So if people have enjoyed the podcast and they want to go check out your book, where's the best place to send them?
So you can go to my website, kimschwalm.com, KIMSCHWALM.com. You can go to the book page. That'll take you right to the Amazon US link. The book's also available through other booksellers online and as a paperback book and also as Kindle and ebook. And then also you could get on, real quick, if you get the book, there's a special QR code in there where you can download my Client Badassery Secrets Toolkit, and you'll get a sales call script and also a client screening questionnaire. So these are really two really helpful tools to do some of the things that we were just talking about. And then, of course, if you decide to become one of my copy insiders, which is free, you'll get my regular emails and you'll also get my ultimate A-list copywriters promo checklist, which is really like 5 checklists in one.
Okay, I know every copywriter out there that listened to this episode, at least one or two of these, they're like, yep, I feel that one. So I'm sure you've probably connected with every single person in the audience, which is hard to do. But again, I just wanted to say thank you for coming on and sharing your experience, your knowledge with us. And one more time, the website,
kimschwalm.com.
And that's S.
Yeah, we're not making you spell out all three names. It's just kimschwalm.com.
Okay, perfect. And we will have that linked in the show notes over at copywriterspodcast.com. While you're there, if you enjoyed this episode, we have over 350 episodes now for you to enjoy. And David, anything else before we're out of here?
No, I just want to thank Kim for coming. I really appreciate it. Very valuable and fun call.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed talking with both of you and really glad to share this with the world.
All right. Kim, thanks again for coming on. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Okay.
Catch you later.
Great.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.